Anybody and time. Anybody was slowly coming to his senses and recalling what a good meal he had had when he last ate. Suddenly he was aware that he was not in a bed or in a dream, but that his back was lying on the hard ground. He thought to himself, "Not again, surely. All this must end somewhere." He began to open his eyes and he said to himself, "Wait, it might be better to just go into a dream." But as his head cleared bit by bit, he finally agreed with himself that this might be a dream, and in fact, might even be a nice place. However, his eyes slowly opened, the bright sun blurred his vision, and all he could see were wavy lines. He felt nauseous for a moment, and then he looked very hard, blinking over and over, shaking his head back and forth. The world finally held still. He found himself sitting up on a cliff overlooking a beautiful valley. He said out loud, but really to himself, "How did I get here? And where is here, I wonder?" To his surprise, a voice answered, "Here is here, of course. Where else could here be?" Anybody swirled around as fast as he could, and there, looking down on him, was emptiness. He had so expected to see someone that anyone was spellbound. Not knowing how to see no one there, he finally sighed and, slapping himself across the face, he said, "Now I'm really in trouble. I am hearing voices, and there is nobody there. I must be losing my mind." The voice, however, replied, much to anybody's surprise, "So I'm nobody, am I?" Anybody whirled around again and looked all over, but still he could see no one. Somehow, in his confusion, he did manage to apologize. "I'm very sorry, but... I mean, I'm sorry, but you surprise me, and I can't seem to see you." "That's right," the voice answered. "And like most fools, just because you can't see something, you assume that it isn't there, don't you?" Now, not just anybody believed that seeing was believing. Many other well-respected people believed this. And, as anybody told a voice, it seemed to be a rational way of behaving. The voice scoffed at anybody who was being logical. "Ha! Fool! Silly fool! Have you ever had a cold?" "Why, yes, I have," replied anybody. "Did you believe it was there?" "Why, of course it was there." "Could you see it?" exclaimed the voice. Anybody became confused and protested it was not the same thing. The voice went on and on, making its point. "How about air? Do you believe in air? Or love? How about friendship?" Finally, anybody, who by now was forced to give in, asked the voice what it was like to live without anybody. The voice broke into laughter. It roared and roared and finally asked, "What makes you think I don't have any body, just because you can't see it?" "Well, I just assumed." "You assumed," the voice came back harshly. "You assumed too much. That's the nature of your problem, you know, don't you?" Anybody assured the voice that he didn't know. In fact, he didn't know anything except that he was anybody. He told the voice, "I don't know where I am or even what time it is." The voice roared with laughter and said, as if imitating the voice of an older man, "Time, huh? What does time mean? Time doesn't mean anything at all." It continued to laugh. "What does it mean to have a book read? It doesn't mean anything at all, does it?" Anybody could only reply that as far as he could tell, nothing didn't mean anything at all. But as he said it, he was sure it sounded stupid. The voice, however, said, "Hey, that's catchy. Nothing doesn't mean anything at all." With that, the voice said, "You know, we're gonna get along just fine." Then a bright light blinded anybody who happened to be looking, and poof! There before him stood a figure of a man. "Where did you come from?" shouted anybody who was startled. You see, he was quite confused about all this. The figure stepped up laughing and said, "Do not concern yourself from whence I came. It is enough that I am here and that you can see me. If you really knew how to know, you would have known I was here all along, and then you would have seen me. But we do not have time for this. We must be off. Are you ready?" "For what?" anybody protested. "To meet her, of course," the figure replied in an astonished tone. "Don't you know?" "Know what?" anybody insisted. The figure roared with laughter, which, by the way, made anybody very nervous, because he did not know what the man was laughing at. So, of course, he assumed he must be laughing at him, and he did not like being laughed at. And so he stood patiently by, while the man laughed and looked like he was not in the least concerned. At last the man stopped laughing and said to anybody who was listening quite attentively, "Let us be off. All this is very silly, and there is really something much more important at hand." Anybody instinctively jumped up and followed the stranger. But all at once he stopped and demanded, "Why should I go with you? Who are you? What is so important?" The stranger turned around slowly and peered at anybody and then slowly began to speak. "It is not for you to question why. As for who I am, you might say, I am one who serves people like you, who are lost in a very special sense of the word lost. But that, of course, would only be one way of describing who I am." Anybody protested, "You must have a name." "A name? What's in a name?" Anybody was ready for any further nonsense and replied, "There are letters in a name. Or if it is not written, then at least there are sounds." "So there are," the stranger conceded. "And in my name there are four letters. T-I-M-E. Anybody recognized at once that this spelled time. But he thought that time was a queer thing for someone to be named. But when your name is anybody, you really can't mention such a thought. So he was content with that, and he pressed on for more relevant information. "Where are we going, time?" "To her," he answered. Suddenly, anybody remembered what time had said just a few minutes ago. What does time mean? It doesn't mean anything at all. Anybody interrupted, even though it was a change of subject. "Time does too mean something. It means you." Time ignored this and continued on his way, stating that anybody firmly understood she shouldn't be kept waiting. With this, time ran on, and anybody followed as best he could, figuring it is better to be somewhere with time than somewhere without. They ran for about an hour when they reached a large mountain that loomed up out of nowhere. Anybody stopped and looked up at the mountain, which was very high and very solemn, standing there all alone. He turned to Time and said, "I'm too tired and I'm hungry. I won't climb up there unless you give me a good reason." Time, who by now was just about out of patience with anybody, stated that both food and rest were at the top and that only rest was here at the bottom. Before anybody could say anything, Time was on his way up, and anybody plodded behind. It seemed like hours before they reached the top, but finally both anybody and Time were standing at the edge of a magnificent garden. Anybody could see no house or castle, nothing but garden. He looked all around, wondering what was up there that was so important. Time, who must have been reading anybody's thoughts, assured him that there was no house, but there was plenty of food. "You understand," Time went on, "the lady has great power, and so it never rains all over the garden at once or gets too hot. There is no need to hide from nature. Nature and the lady are good friends, and they both have used their great powers to build this garden. By this point, anybody had really taken kind of a liking to Time, though he did wish he would change his name. They walked into the garden, and anybody admired its beauty. Presently, they came to a clearing, a green field in the centre of which was a stone pavilion with a waterfall filling a great pool. An oaken table laden with a great feast stood by the pool. Time placed his arm on the back of anybody and led him to the table. They ate and ate till they could eat no more. They finally sat back sipping wine, and Time began to speak. "Anybody, my friend, you may not know much about who you are, or where you've been, or even where you're going, but you sure know how to eat." Time laughed heartily. Anybody felt better than he had in a long time. He thought of asking questions, but then decided it never does him any good anyway. So he just sat back and smiled. Presently, anybody fell asleep, and though he could not quite remember his dreams, he saw a tremendous fountain that sprayed the most wondrous water. He felt himself lifted into the air and floating through space. He saw the sorcerer in the purple robes and heard him whisper in his ear, but he could not understand. Then suddenly he became aware that he was sleeping. Even worse, that he was waking up. His mind raced, his heart pounded. He thought, "Where will I be now?" And just when I had found a place I liked. Slowly opened his eyes and sighed with relief. He was still in the garden, and Time was still with him, sitting by the pond, swishing his feet in the water and poking his fingers between the stones of the pavilion. He noticed anybody was watching and turned to him. "So you awaken, my sleepy head. Too much wine, I dare say, but the lady decided to let you sleep. So sleep you had, and you had better wash yourself and be presentable to meet her." Anybody washed and followed Time through the forest to another clearing. Then he saw her and stopped cold in his tracks. She was not soft and gentle as he had expected, the delicate fantasy of a kind, helpful lady. She was tall and fierce. Yet in her own way she was more beautiful than any woman he had ever seen. She wore robes of bright red, and she was like a huge crimson rose in the middle of a green garden. She did not turn or make any sign of being aware of the approaching two. Yet anybody could sense that she knew they were there. She spoke at last, slowly, and anybody detected a clever tone behind the well-chosen words. "You are here at last. I had dreamed you would come. Was the journey difficult?" She turned and gazed at anybody who was watching her. "What do you want from me?" anybody inquired in the most casual voice he could muster. Underneath, he was terrified. "A favor," she replied. She seemed to be searching for something, eyeing anybody as closely as she could. Anybody was surprised, but still scared. "What could such a great person like you want from me?" "Why, I don't even know..." His voice trailed off because the lady was shaking her head. No. And he did not know what she was signalling no to. So he went silent. She smiled at him, and he felt different, more at ease. She said, "Do not be afraid. I will not hurt you. And the favour I need I will explain later. For now, just be my welcomed guest." Anybody spent the next 3 days in the garden. He spent time with the lady and with Time, though he could find out almost nothing. They would just laugh and give him silly answers. He asked the lady her name, but she said, "I might be called a sorceress or a witch, or I might be called a princess, but never will I tell my name to anybody, for in my name lies great power." At the end of the third day, Time came and got anybody from the pool where he was bathing. They went back to the second clearing. The lady sat on a velvet couch, and as anybody entered the clearing, marvelling at her beauty, he gasped. To the lady's right was the sorcerer in purple. Anybody fell to his knees and begged for mercy. The sorcerer jumped up in anger. "Stop this! Pull yourself together! We have no time for your snivelling!" Anybody, stopping with a jolt, stood up and faced the two powerful figures. The old sorcerer sat down. "That's better, my boy. You get a hold of yourself. You have to face much worse than me before this is through." Anybody was struck with fear. "Before what is through?" he trembled. The sorcerer motioned with his hand for anybody to sit down. "Now, listen carefully, my boy. You have much to learn and much to do. You must forgive us for the way you arrived, but we had to be very sure that no one knew who you were." "Well, you shouldn't have any problem there," anybody retorted. "I don't even know who I am." "Believe me," the sorcerer cautioned him, "it is just as well you don't know who you are, really." Anybody was very concerned at all this, and his worry showed all over his face. The lady looked at him softly and reassured him that as long as he didn't know who he really was, no one could have power over him or power to hurt him. She went on to tell him, "The power to cast spells lies in knowing which words to use with each specific person. Their name is the most powerful, along with the words from their history. We all have histories, though we have kept them very secret, and we have kept our names very secret as well. The evil powers with which we have to contend know much about us. They have many spies, and our powers up until now have been evenly matched with theirs. But recently all of us here have received a deadly blow. We, the wise ones, who have for centuries protected all the worlds to our rear, are now in jeopardy. The Master of the Unknown has learned my name, and perhaps the names of my noble friends who reside here with me. We can feel that our powers are waning, and the fate of those who are protected by us unknowingly is at stake. We have selected you from among them to aid us in our hour of need. You are shielded by your own ignorance, and we wish for you to go forth as our army." Anybody could not believe his ears. He was both honoured and terrified. He looked back at the lady in astonishment. "But how can I be an army?" The sorcerer interrupted. "Yes, exactly. What does it mean for one man to be an army? This is your task. You must go forth into the domain of the unknown. You alone must cross the barrier where none of us have dared to tread. But more important, you must return and bring with you information. Vital information about the master of the unknown reaches of the beyond. Do you now understand?" The sorcerer eyed anybody who was watching him and listening to him. Anybody screamed, "I can't! Don't make me do it! I... He began to sob and whimper. The sorcerer slapped him and shook him. "Get a hold of yourself! You are but one small particle in a huge universe. Have you really so much to lose?" Anybody suddenly came to his senses. What the sorcerer had said crystallized in his mind. He really had nothing, so he had nothing to lose. He thought to himself, "I will risk all the nothing I have and face the unknown in search of something." This gave him a sense of purpose. This was something worth having nothing for. He turned from fear to stone-cold resolution. He took a deep breath and turned to the lady, who had been patiently watching his outburst. "I will go. I will do what you ask. Facing the unknown out there could be no worse than facing all that that I don't know here." The lady and the sorcerer smiled, and they all ate a great feast together. The wise ones were called together. They instructed anybody in what they knew of the method of their adversary. He was instructed in spells and counterspells, word magic and thing magic, hexes and counter-hexes, all the knowledge they believed might be an asset to their brave warrior. Anybody slept well that night and practiced his new skills all the next week. Finally, the sorcerer came to him and said, "My friend, you must be off. Time will be your guide as far as he can. Then you will be on your own. Practice you might need, but it would only be dangerous history that could be used against you. Be off now. I wish you a safe and speedy return, but do not return without some of his history, or there will most likely be nowhere to return to." The sorcerer patted anybody on the back and led him to the edge of the mountain. Time had compiled provisions for both of them. These they took upon their backs and began their journey. Anybody and Time came down the mountain and passed quickly and quietly for 2 days through thick forest until they reached a clearing. Anybody could see for miles and miles. There was only nothing and more nothing, a great plain before them. Time turned back to Anybody and extended his hand in friendship. Somehow, Anybody could tell they were about to part. Time said, "This is it, my fearless companion. We must part, for I can go no further." Anybody wished that his companion would continue on the journey, but he knew it would be fruitless to ask him to continue. So Anybody said goodbye and went on alone. Time stood still and watched him walk on. Anybody turned around just in time to see Time dissolve into thin air. And now Anybody knew that he was surely on his own. The days passed slowly. Anybody crossed the great plain and came to a forest. It was unlike any forest he had ever seen, and with some reservation he entered and made his way into the trees. As he passed slowly through miles of trees, he watched and listened, but nothing out of the ordinary could be perceived. Yet he knew that more than the odd trees around him accounted for his feeling of uneasiness. Something suddenly struck him from behind. He turned around so quickly that he saw the pebble that had struck him falling to the ground. He was so terrified that everything appeared to be in slow motion. He lifted his gaze and was face to face with a queer old man bent and stooped by the ears, dressed as a pauper. "Have you any food to share with an old man who is hungry?" Anybody was so relieved that he pulled some bread from his pack and handed it to the old man. The old man began to eat and peered at Anybody out of the corner of his eyes. "Who are you, my dear young man, who comes walking in my forest alone and unprotected from the forces that lie here within?" Anybody, who had relaxed somewhat, became tense again. I'm just Anybody, and I'm going." He became aware that he had no destination. "I have no, The old man interrupted. "Are you running away from someone?" Yes, I am, and I don't know where I'm going." The old man seemed pleased at all this. "And you don't know where you are going?" Anybody tried to grasp the moment. "I have no future as of now, and I am looking for one." He stated this with as much conviction as he could. The old man began to speak in riddles which Anybody could not understand. The old man rattled on and on. "Running horse, slithering snake, laughing spell, disappearing act." Suddenly it occurred to Anybody that the old man was trying to attack him with magic. "What are you doing?" Anybody demanded of the old man. "Nothing," the old man conceded. I was just talking to myself, but who are you really that trespasses in my woods? Anybody assured the old man that he would be glad to leave if the old man would show him the way. But the old man shook his head, no, and drew a huge sword from under his cloak. The old man no longer looked old, but rather like a great warrior cast in bronze, fearless and deadly. Anybody was filled with fright. His mind raced through all the sorcerer had told him until a description of this guardian of the forest passed through his mind. He called out, "You may find it so handy that it will give you a lift." He glanced at the arm and the hand that held the sword. It began to rise up. "I can handle that," said the old man turned warrior, and his movement stopped. He smiled at anybody and said, "Yes, I can, but only as quickly as your heart attacks." "Naturally," intoned anybody, "as soon as you can respond fully to my riddle." "Pray begin to continue," said the old man warrior. Anybody began, "Head is to hat as body is to, and I am to my as you are to, and crosses are to T's as dots are to comfortably." And even as the old man warrior's eyelids grew heavy, anybody heard him whisper, "You must be frozen with anticipation." Anybody felt paralyzed, and a cold chill ran up his spine. The old man warrior began to move forward blindly, his sword still suspended. "You will come up against no stumbling block if only you always put your best foot forward," said anybody haltingly. The old man warrior slowed and he continued to inch his right leg towards anybody while his left was left. Anybody chuckled and said, "Amazing! You give them an inch and they take a mile. That could give you a splitting headache." Anybody could tell that the guardian of the forest was beginning to crack up. "Pull yourself together," commanded anybody cuttingly. "Remember, it could have been worse. You might have been a chip off the old block, or a spitting image, or my cup of tea, or a bag of hot wind." "Enough," cried the guardian, who looked quite withered by the experience. "Not quite. I think you're due to sit for a spell," said anybody, casting about for an appropriate next move. "I'd rather lie," replied the guardian truthfully. "Of course," said anybody acidly, "but it might burn you up," the guardian screamed. But anybody caused him to flush and wash away the irritating sensations. "Sleep deeply, O guardian, with a song in your heart and a pocket full of dreams, until I call for you," directed anybody. And he went on his way. He was very tired and very afraid, yet quite impressed with his new powers. He had learned better than he had suspected from the teachings he had received, but now he only desired to rest for a short time. He found a place with shelter and settled down to sleep. The sword fell to the ground and the figure turned old and withered again. "Do not destroy me," he begged. "I did not know you were one of power." Anybody placed a guardian into a deep sleep and went on his way. Immediately, anybody entered a dream, or what he thought was a dream. He felt his mind struggling to open many doors that had been very tightly shut. One by one they would open, and there would be nothing inside. Time and time again he struggled to open a door, just to find an empty room. He then became aware that it was not his mind at all that was searching. It was his mind that was being searched. He struggled to awaken, but he could not. He fought with himself to achieve consciousness and finally did, but he was no longer in the forest or still asleep. He was standing in a courtyard devoid of people except for one whom he could not see. This one spoke from within a tent of silken veils situated in the centre of the courtyard. Why are you here? I don't really know, anybody answered. Do you come to match your powers against mine? The voice was hard and unyielding. Oh no, I'm kind of lost, anybody assured the voice. They have sent you from the mountain.
In their folly, they underestimated me once again, and you have walked into your death.
A figure emerged through the veils. Anybody watched, both intrigued and horrified, at how much this person knew and the mention of his death. But he had volunteered to die, and if he had to, he would. A huge figure stepped out from the tent. It had the body of a man with the head of a bear, or so it appeared. He had no normal hands, but giant claws with long talons. Anybody stepped back and gasped with horror. How could I hurt you? I'm so small and you're so fierce. The figure stopped and peered at anybody. You know how, don't you? Anybody protested that he was just dreaming. None of this was real, and no one can hurt anyone else in a dream. Poof!
The figure was no longer a monster, but only a man like any other.
What have you done? The figure demanded. I have done nothing, anybody protested. So we are to match power against power, are we? No, anybody protested. He decided it was time to be very careful.
I have just come to meet with one so powerful that we might become allies.
If I am welcome, let us talk as friends do. The man eyed him carefully and thoughtfully, and then clapped his hands and yelled, Table, food, wine, music for my guest. Suddenly a table laden with a great feast appeared, and behind it musicians already playing. Finally the man extended his hand to anybody and said, You may call me the one who guides. How may I be of service to you? Anybody was at a loss to answer. I am anybody. I seek to understand. To understand what? The man peered at him. The ways of the unknown. And before anybody could say another word, the man said, So be it, and clapped his hands. Anybody found himself lying on a hillside overlooking a great city. He thought at first he must have awakened from his dream. But to his dismay, he still held his wine glass in his hand. Anybody walked slowly down the hill into a city bustling with people of many strange races. Everyone in the city seemed to have a purpose and to be in a hurry. Anybody just strolled along, wondering what would happen next. A soldier approached him and looked him squarely in the eye. Follow me, he said. Follow me. Anybody followed the soldier to a great palace and was taken to the quarters of the soldiers. The captain of the guards was a giant man who carried a tremendous staff. He was scolding the younger soldiers for brawling when anybody approached him. The soldier who had escorted anybody presented him by name, so to speak. This surprised anybody, as he had never met any of these people before. The captain turned to anybody and looked him over. So you wish to be a soldier? It was not my intention, no, answered anybody. He sent you, didn't he? The captain persisted. I guess he did, anybody replied. Well, let's begin now. The captain signalled for anybody to follow him and led him to a courtyard where soldiers were practicing with swords and staffs. They were all large men and quick of hand. The sound of clashing steel rung in anybody's ears, and he wondered if he could even stand the piercing sound. The old man handed anybody a large sword. He could barely hold it. The captain demanded, Strike me. Anybody thought that attacking the captain was a preposterous idea. He retorted, I will not. The captain swung his huge staff and a blow fell on anybody's chest. He fell down, gulping for air, and rose with fire in his eyes. He was furious. Something in him clicked. His mind raced through discussions of the armies of the unknown, and he cried out in anger, Stop! Stop! I say, down on your knees. The courtyard became silent. Swords and spears fell like rain. 100 men fell to their knees and the captain was thrown over backwards.
Anybody held out his hand in a gesture of strength and all obeyed him.
They begged for mercy before him. He turned and left the courtyard. He entered the palace feeling invincible. A mere gesture from his hand and the guards would fall to their knees. He walked straight into the throne room and the attendants parted before him. As they did, he saw the one who guides on his throne smiling. A brilliant performance, my friend. He began to clap. But anybody was not amused. He peered at the figure on the throne and reached from within his mind to the mind of the one who guides. They struggled. Time stood still. The tension built to a climax. The one who guides fell to his knees and crawled before his new master. The one who guides rose to his feet and his face filled with hatred. He looked down at anybody who was watching him and said, "Do not overestimate yourself, little one. I am not a mere captain." Anybody could feel the great power of the one who guides blocking his thoughts from entering. The one who guides smiled queerly. "Do you wish a journey? Go into your thoughts. You can go now." Anybody's mind went blank for a second. As his thoughts began to race, he heard in the back of his mind, "Do not let him distract you." He regained his train of thought and let a burst of anger from his hand. But to his amazement, he was standing in front of a great mirror. Or was it a mirror? There were two of him. He decided it must be the guide. They moved in unison. Anybody was unsure who was leading and who was following. Anybody became somewhat unnerved by this, but he remained steadfast and poured his thoughts upon the one who guides. The self-image of anybody turned into the one who guides, but still they moved in circles as cats before the battle, matching both strength of will and body. The one who guides broke the silence with a burst of spells. "Isn't anybody going blank a little bit? What do I mean by what I say? Isn't anybody falling down and down?"
Anybody blocked out the spells by looking quickly at the one who guides' foot, as if something were happening to it.
The guide instinctively glanced down at his foot, and anybody yelled, "Silence!" Again the two stared at each other, will to will, eye to eye, in a battle of power. Anybody was draining himself. He could feel his power beginning to wane. He knew he could not keep this up much longer. Suddenly, it occurred to anybody that perhaps the same thing was happening to the one who guides. He said, "You can feel your power waning. You're growing weaker and weaker. Now you can feel it draining, waning, draining weaker and meeker. Now." The one who guides began to look pale. He struggled to regain his strength, but anybody grasped a hold of the moment and threw it at him, knocking the one who guides off balance. They began to cast spells at each other, ducking and dogging, till finally a thought began to crystallize in anybody's mind. All the history of the one who guides he had learned from the sorcerer, all he had seen and heard since his arrival, all he knew of the one who guides in his mind. He gazed at the guide knowingly. The guide fell under the weight of such thoughts, screaming and squirming on the floor. The battle was over. "Where is he?" anybody demanded. "I can't tell you," the guide pleaded with anybody. But anybody bent his will until the guide agreed to take him wherever he wished to go. They set out in the morning, just the two of them. The guide said they were going to a city named Ish, where the master resided. They went through many strange places for 3 days until they were standing at the edge of a pasture, a mile or two on the other side of which stood a city such as anybody had never seen. Great towers rose up into the sky, almost out of sight, and glistened with stone, clear and brilliant. The guide begged, He will kill me. Let me go back now. Anybody agreed and marched on alone, with determination to face what before he had feared without seeing its glory and power. He approached the city, but as he neared the front gate, he sensed, though he was not sure how, power. Power such as he had not ever experienced. He could not enter. He stepped back. There was no guard at the gate, so he tried again, but the force was too strong. He could not pass the open gate. He became aware that no voices could be heard from within the city. In fact, not even a sound. He camped by the city and waited, but he was not sure what he waited for. The sun sank. He grew sleepy, so he curled up and drifted into a deep sleep. He dreamed of long and terrible wars that were beyond his comprehension. He saw the crowning of a king, but no faces could he see well enough to recognize. He saw a massive oaken door and sensed something horrible behind it, and he saw a small book with engraved letters he could not read. Then he heard the sound of horses' hooves, but almost at the same moment realized they were not in his dream. He sprang to his feet and turned, and there he saw a beautiful princess on a white horse. Just as he felt the first twinge of enjoyment at so lovely a sight, two large men jumped out from the nearby bushes and grabbed the horse. One tried to grab the lovely young woman. Anybody cried out instinctively. His scream was shrill and loud. The two men stopped dead in their tracks. They drew swords, but anybody raised his hand and the swords fell to the ground. His anger swelled up. He was so hot he screamed again, and the two men burst into flames and ran off into the woods. The beautiful lady rode back into the city. Anybody felt proud that he had been so helpful. Yet he wished the lady had stopped and spoken with him. He once again tried to enter the city, but could not. He was very frustrated. He sighed and sat back down again. Then he heard a voice calling from within the city walls. Enter and be welcome. The master is grateful for your service to him. He wishes to reward such valor. Anybody entered the city. This time he felt no force repelling him. He was greeted by a page who took him to a guest house. Still he saw or heard no one in the city, just himself and the page. He bathed and was brought new clothes, and was led into a hall with blazing fires at either end. There he waited. Presently the princess entered. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen, perhaps more beautiful than even the sorceress. She thanked him and spoke of other things, but he became mesmerized by the tone of her voice. He was lost in her words, swimming like one in the ocean, being dunked by waves and coming up for air now and again. Suddenly she looked over her shoulder and thanked him again and left. The room was silent. The ground began to rumble. Anybody looked up and noticed a great oaken door. Slowly the door opened and he felt a source of immense power. His will was crumbling under the pressure. He forced himself with all his strength to stand erect. Flames filled the room as the door opened, and a being 10 times anybody's height entered, filling the room with his presence. The voice echoed, "Who are you?" Anybody was shocked and terrified. Nobody. I mean, anybody. Oh my. The voice came again. Do not be frightened too much, little one. You saved my niece from ones who would have held her for ransom. I will not hurt you, but I will grant you a favor. What would you have from me that you are at the gates of my city? Anybody was quite sure this was not the time to ask for a biography. So he told the master, I have come to see greatness, to behold it so that my life would have meaning, even if I should die for it. And this I have done. I have seen your greatness and the beauty of the one I helped. This is reward enough. The voice rumbled again. Surely I can grant you something. What would you desire? Anybody was somewhat more relaxed, so he ventured a request. I would ask to take a meal with your niece. I have never seen such beauty, and the pleasure of her company would be the greatest gift a man could desire. The voice roared with laughter. You are a strange one, but I detect there is power in you also. I will grant your wish, and we will meet again if I am not wrong. You have some other purpose, do you not? Anybody felt his every thought being searched. He focused his attention on the princess. The oaken door closed, and anybody collapsed to the floor. He was very strained. He was taken to his guest house, and there he waited till the page returned and led him to a garden where a meal had been laid upon a table. And he ate and talked and laughed with the princess. She was lonely, so she was willing to talk, but knew nothing of her uncle except that after her parents were killed, he had cared for her. She saw him rarely and was always afraid when she did. The city had fewer than 100 people in it. All were servants to the master. The armies were to the west in another city. Messengers would come and go, but she knew nothing of what was going on in the world around her. She had wished for years to leave this place, but her uncle would not permit it. Anybody enjoyed his visit and slept well that night in a fine bed. In the morning he had breakfast served to him and then was summoned to the master. He went again to the great hall, and there he waited until the master appeared through the oaken door and spoke. I have decided that whatever mischief you came here to perpetuate, I can make you a better offer. You will stay and be company for my niece. You will be honourable, or I shall torture you beyond belief. The master made an image of dungeons with snakes and devices of pain came into anybody's mind. She is lonely and needs friendship as young women and young men do. Go now, I have other matters to attend to. Anybody returned to his house and for the next 3 weeks rode and played and laughed with the princess. It was by far the best time of his life, but always on his mind was the task he had promised to perform. He was free to roam the city, but there was nowhere to go and nothing to discover about the master. He was unsure just what the next move would be. However, in the course of a conversation that evening, the princess said she was so surprised when she had found the master writing in a diary. She told anybody who was listening quite attentively now that the master told her that he keeps a complete record of his whole life so it would be recorded for history's sake. Anybody thought, this is my chance to succeed in my endeavour. Possibly I can escape with the diary and the princess. So he set out that night to find the diary. He walked down the long narrow street, wondering in which building, in which room the diary was kept. His feet moved slowly and carefully along the cobblestone street. He turned around and around wondering, really wondering, in which building the secret was hidden. Next to the great hall was a massive stone building with long columns down the front and a door 8 feet high. Anybody thought to himself, this might be the place the master could pass under the door. And perhaps a diary was within. However, anybody couldn't open the huge door. In fact, he could not even reach the handle. So he walked around until he noticed that he could enter the building by climbing up the side and passing in a window along the top. This took quite some time, but he was very determined. When he reached the window, he slid inside, quite like a cat. It was very dark, and he could hear a low, steady, from somewhere in the big building. He slipped down to the floor and began to explore, but he heard faint footsteps, one for each of his. He held his breath, but suddenly he lost his grip and became frightened and slowly turned around, opening his eyes wide as he could. He was by himself. He did not know what to do. He had never had to face up to himself this way. He had faced up to the guide and the guardian of the forest, but now he was beside himself with fright, and he did not know what to do. Instinctively, he thrust out his arm, but he overreached himself. He began to float up as if he were weightless. He looked down at himself for a moment, wondering how he had gotten himself into such a mess. Anybody was more confused than he had ever been in the whole course of all his doings. At that moment, everything in the room began to float. The chairs, the table, everything. Anybody was lost in a swirling conglomeration of objects. Suddenly he looked sideways at himself, but then a wind swept him away down a tunnel. He was ahead of himself, and then he surpassed himself and was behind himself. All this was driving him quite insane when, at that very moment, he must have spread himself too thin because he couldn't figure out which him was the real him. He was all over the place everywhere he looked. And worst yet, he was looking from everywhere. No, he had been nowhere and somewhere, but he had never been everywhere all at once. So he began to try and pull himself together. One by one, he got hold of himself, and he would hold himself back so he didn't go to pieces again. This whole episode was a shattering one for anybody. He would grab hold of himself, then he would feel himself slipping away again. Finally, the wind stopped, and little by little, he collected himself. But he was quite sure that he wasn't all there, so he began to look around. And sure enough, he found himself leaning against the door in a great hall. He gave himself a pat on the back as he asked himself, "How did I go all to pieces so?" To his surprise, he answered himself, "Anybody. Just think how many of you there are inside you to become. This is the temple where one learns to find himself." Anybody was quite pleased to discover that talking to himself could be so educational. At last he checked to make sure he was all there and began again to search for the diary. He went back upstairs to the open window and began to climb out and slipped. Anybody lifted himself off the street. He moved on to the next likely building and went to enter but could not. He tried to pass in the door, but he became frozen with fright, trapped in an impossible actuality. With utter clarity, he realized this was more than just a bewildering confrontation. It was a depressing realization. He was not entering a door, but falling down, head over heels, twisting and turning down deeper and deeper, falling and falling into what he did not know. Until, splash, he was immersed in very cold water. He pulled himself out of what appeared to be a large pond. As he crawled up on the rocks, he became aware of the sound of laughter. He turned, and there were two mysterious men dressed like wizards, roaring with laughter and slapping each other on the back. Suddenly one of them became very serious and peered at anybody directly. "Explain yourself," the first wizard demanded. The second wizard laughed even harder. Anybody replied, "I cannot." The first wizard continued, "What stops you?" His voice was low and inquiring. Anybody thought this was a most unusual question, but before he could reply, the second wizard also became serious and interjected. "Reasons. Reasons stop him. Reasons stop him from talking and thinking and smiling and forgetting and forgiving. And in fact, reason stops him, period." Both wizards again roared with laughter. Anybody imagined how silly he must have looked, falling out of the sky into their pond to two such wise old men. It was really a moving experience. He turned back to apologise, as any polite person would under such circumstances, and to his surprise, there was only one wizard, one very large mirror, which seemed to be following anybody around wherever he moved. The remaining wizard looked meaningfully at anybody and asked with all sincerity, "How do things look to you?" The whole situation was becoming quite unpleasant. Anybody felt it was better not to let it show, but it always seemed to be right there in front of him wherever he would look. The more nervous he became, the more the mirror would laugh, until he noticed it wasn't a mirror after all. It was the other wizard, who had the most concerned, warm expression on his face. "Why are you here?" he asked courteously. The other wizard interrupted before anybody could answer. "There are reasons, you know, reasons." They both laughed again and slapped each other on the back. Anybody thought perhaps he had better leave. He asked the way out, but neither wizard answered. They just turned to each other and looked back at anybody with displeasure. The first wizard took anybody by the hand. "No, no, you can't leave yet, now, can you? You must ask for the help you need first, but not yet. First, we wish to share with you a story." They took anybody who begrudgingly agreed to listen mostly out of fear, and they placed him in a chair and handed him a book. They very sincerely told him that this was the Book of Time. The first wizard said, while he held it, he would constantly hear the winds of time and change. Anybody became aware of the sound of rushing wind. Sound came from his other side. The second wizard was nearby. Together now. The wizards continued to make the sound of the winds of time and change. The second wizard's face was almost beatific, eyes moist and unfocused. Only later did anybody realize that the first wizard had been speaking in his other ear. And through this rushing torrent of sound, he first heard one wizard in one ear say, "There's no need to talk and no need to move." While in the other ear, he continued to hear the sounds of the winds of time and change. Then they would reverse and the winds of time and change would rush in the other ear. And in the other ear, he heard, "There is no need to listen and no need to hear, because now it is time to find a memory from a long time ago." Now torrents of memories flooded him, washing away well-guarded secrets. But the voice continued in the other ear, "There's no need to remember. It's a boring task to remember anything." But suddenly he was finished. Before he had even started, he stood there facing the two wizards who were laughing and slapping each other on the back in an uncontrollable fashion. Anybody shook his head to clear it, but he seemed to be very drowsy and half asleep and half awake and very unsure of which was which. He opened his eyes, and the wizard who was facing him said, "I am very sorry for mistreating you so. Perhaps we were a bit hard on you." The wizard extended his hand in friendship. Anybody reached for it automatically. The next thing he was aware of was picking himself up off the street. His clothes were dry and the sun was coming up. He had lost hours and he had no idea where to look to find them. He only got halfway up, however, before he realized he had been lying on a large book with an inscription on the outside that could not be read. The diary. How did I find it? He grabbed it and ran back to his guest house. He packed his things and paused only to debate whether to hide the book or quickly try to rush it back to the sorcerer and sorceress. Then he stopped altogether and curiosity began to gnaw at him. He asked, "What was written in this book?" He decided he should read it and make sure it was the right book, even though it was the only one left. He turned to the first page, and though he continually blinked hard, a large hand reached right out of the first page and grabbed him by the collar and dragged him back into the book. This may sound somewhat strange to you, but this was a somewhat strange book. Anybody couldn't believe it either. Anyway, the person on the end of the hand was very large. He looked down at anybody who was watching him and inquired, "So you want to learn something, do you?" Anybody was quite terrified at this, and he assured the person that he did not want anything. "This whole thing is just a coincidence, an accident," anybody insisted. The giant figure leaned over him and deviously stated, "I know this is Earth Coincidence Control Center, and what exactly don't you want to learn?" Anybody insisted that he didn't want to learn anything except how to get out of the book. The figure only replied, "I know, and so you must go over there and empty that pail." The figure pointed to a large bucket near anybody. Anybody approached the bucket and looked in, but there was nothing in the bucket, and became very confused, and his head began to spin, trying to figure out what this meant. He looked up to say there was nothing in the bucket, but there was no one in the room, just him, in his room with a closed book. Time seemed to stand still. The next thing he heard was a sorcerer's voice. "Gaps in your experience. And remember well that today's is was yesterday's will be at the same time that it will be tomorrow's." Time was up. Therefore, it was high time that anybody bestirred himself from the present past memories. In no time, he slipped into an alley that led him to a point to the door. "Oops!" he continued on his way down the street, pausing to catch his breath. "I must continue," he thought to himself. He pushed on to the next likely site. He went up by the stepping stones near the door, and there on the door was a sign that read, "Opening this door is a moving experience." Anybody hesitated. He wished to find the diary, but was in no hurry to meet the absurd. But he followed the stepping stones in, and as he did, he thought to himself, "This is a crying shame. I have no idea where to look." But through the tears, he received an answer.